everybody. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm here with Olivier Moncando, and he has a very wonderful story to share with us. So I'm just going to let him jump right in and tell us a little bit about himself. Olivier, I understand that you are one of those lucky people who was able to lose a lot of weight and turn around your whole picture of well-being. And it's a beautiful story. People love hearing stories like this. So let's get started.
So my name is Olivier Moncando, and I'm a speaker, author, and weight loss and wellness coach. So basically what I do, I go on event and I speak to people to share my knowledge and the experience I've had with this plant-based nutrition so that more people can be empowered and start making good life choices. And apart from that as well, I've written a book so I can reach more people because I cannot go to all the events. So with my book, I can reach more people. And I continue as well to serve people as I've got an online membership club where I support members to make a lot of progress on the health journey. So in a nutshell, that's what I do.
Okay. And I like that you said in a nutshell because nuts are plant-based.
Yeah.
All right. Olivier, tell me about your upbringing. Tell me about the foods that you were brought up on. Tell me how you gained the weight you didn't want and how you discovered how to lose it. Is that too much all at once?
No, that's okay. So basically, I used to eat like everybody else. I was eating animal product, dairy product, processed food, junk food. Anything you can think of, I was eating that. And my health was not very good at all. I was suffering from high blood pressure. And people need to understand that 50% of heart attack and strokes are caused by high blood pressure. You can have kidney failures, heart failures, problem with your sight just by having a high blood pressure. And I was suffering from that. And apart from that, I remember that at some point, I had to spend a day and a half in hospital because my blood pressure was so high. Mm. And I was suffering from headaches as well. I had massive headaches every day or every other day. And I had to have some paracetamol with me all the time because in my wallet, because the headache was so bad. I had lots of dandruffs. I was suffering from chest pain, back pain, abscesses, joint pain, and my weight was 220 pounds. So it was really, really bad. And my wife has to massage me maybe twice a week because of my bad back. And I remember I had to be off work for a week because my back was killing me. And so, like I said, my eating habit was very, very bad. And I was still eating until midnight. I would have my bottle of Coca-Cola. I would have some biscuits, some cookies, and all sorts of things. And my health started to deteriorate. I was feeling tired all the time. For example, on my work days, I had to drag myself out of bed. And on my days off, I was sleeping until 1 p.m. because I was so tired. I had no energy. And especially where I was working in the basement and I had to climb the stairs all the time. And I was always out of breath. And my belly, for example, was so big that it became very difficult for me to tie up my laces. So it was really, really difficult. And at some point, I went to the doctor and he told me that basically I would be on medication for the rest of my life. And I don't know at that time, I didn't know what I know now, but I refused. I said, this is not possible. I can't be on medication for the rest of my life. And he told me, okay, so what are you going to do? I said, okay, I will try to do some exercise and to try and see if my blood pressure will go down. And I joined a karate club in trying to reduce my blood pressure, but it didn't work. So I was just buying medication over the counter, for example, for my heartburn, for my bad back and stuff like that. And one day in 2016, I was just watching a program on YouTube and it was by an Indian yogi. And the title of the talk, the program was How Consciously Do We Eat? And in the program, he was saying that meat was not designed for the human mechanism. And if we stop eating meat and all the animal product, we could reduce 70% of the chronic diseases. And because I was suffering from all this stuff, I said, okay, I've got nothing to lose. I will try that. And it was a certain Wednesday. And I said to my wife, okay, I will stop eating meat. On Thursday, I went to work. When I came back, I asked her to cook my last meal of meat. And on Friday, that started. And it's been 5 years. I've not touched any animal product, no dairy product. So I went cold turkey. So that's my journey.
You are in the UK right now?
Yes.
And were you born there? Is that where you were raised?
No. I was born in Congo, in Central Africa.
Ah, and yes. So how long did you live there?
I lived there for 29 years.
29 years.
Yes.
And was your diet the same as it was in the UK before you went plant-based?
No, because basically in Africa, there's not much processed food. So basically myself, I was not eating much processed food. It was usually beans, rice, but yes, a lot of meat, but not that much that I was eating here in the UK. So
right. When
I was back in Congo, when I left, when I was 29, I was not overweight. I was still a little bit slim. So
okay, that was one of the things I wanted to get at. So you came to the UK.
Yes.
And the problems were magnified.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe had you not adopted this Western advanced, I don't know what to call it, highly processed diet, because you still had meat in the diet, you might have experienced some of these problems later in life.
Yes. Yeah.
But because the processed food and the meat is such a disaster, you started to experience these problems sooner than later.
Yes.
And the rest of your family, has your wife jumped on board with you with this new style of eating?
Yes. She jumped on board. But before that, what I've noticed is that when I went plant-based, I was able to lose 77 pounds and all the chronic diseases that I've had are completely gone. I don't suffer from blood pressure anymore, no back pain, no headaches. Every single ailment is gone. And I've been able as well to slow down my aging process, because people, when they see me, they think that I'm in my late 20s, but I'm actually 51. So I've been able to do that. And for the past 5 years, I've not been sick a single day, not even the cold, the flu, nothing at all. And when I changed my way of eating for the first week, it was very difficult because of the healing crisis. I had more headaches. For 3 days, massive headaches that I've never had in my life. I had more cold sore, more abscesses, my joint aching more, and it was really bad. So my wife asked me to stop, but I said, no, I'm not going to stop. I will continue with that. And after a week, I was able to lose 11 pounds, which was really surprising for me. And after that, I started to have more energy. And after 2 weeks, my wife said that she was going to do that as well. And after a month, we ask our children to be in this plant-based diet as well. So obviously they were not happy to do that, but I guess, but after that they got used to it. So yes, my wife went with that and she was able to lose 99 pounds.
Wow, okay.
99 pounds.
And your wife, is she from the UK or is she from another place also? Was she raised on a different diet?
No, we got married when we was back in Congo.
Okay, so she's from the same area.
Area than me, yes.
It's always very interesting when they do studies of different areas, people from other countries, Africa, Japan, whatever, and then they come to the United States or the UK and all of a sudden either that generation or the next generation blows up with so many different problems that they didn't see in their own country where they were eating maybe not the healthiest diet, but definitely healthier.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet somehow we're not getting that message, or at least not fast enough, in my opinion, right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Well, good for you. Well, I want to say that you look great. You have a fabulous smile.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, this is an audio podcast, so people unfortunately will not be able to see you, but I can see you.
Yes.
And it's a funny thing because we're such a narcissistic society and everybody is concerned about the way they look. To me, it's a no-brainer. The number one first thing you can do, not only to feel better, but to look better, is to eat a whole food plant diet. You said you're 51. Yeah. I'm 63 and I've been doing this for 33 years and I know how good it feels. It works.
Definitely.
Now, I want to also make a disclaimer because it doesn't prevent everything, but it definitely gives us an excellent foundation. Mm-hmm. We live in a very toxic world. Everybody has their own emotional problems, anxiety and stress. It's a scary place, and that also affects our health, and we're acknowledging that more and more. But when you start by eating a whole food plant diet and you realize that all these problems you had are going away, it really gives you more motivation, I think, and more inspiration. And then you can go further and do other things to improve your life and your health and the people all around you. And all of that feels good. It's a win, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Beautiful. When you were describing your weight loss, it sounded like you had a little detox the first week you were going. You were feeling a lot of symptoms. As you were eating healthier, your body was experiencing discomfort. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because that scares a lot of people.
Yes. What people need to understand is that when you've been eating the wrong food for a very long time, that's the way your body will make you feel better. So you will, first of all, feel really awful. You will go through an eating crisis. And most people, when they go through this eating crisis, they will say, no, I have to stop because I'm sure my body is missing protein or something like that. I need to continue. And when they stop the plant-based, they start eating what they was used to eat, the eating crisis stop, and they say, yes, you see, it's that the diet or the plant-based nutrition is very bad. But what people need to understand is that's how the body detoxifies. It's because you've been eating the wrong food, you've not been doing the stuff the right way, and that's why your body will give you these things. So for some people, they will start smelling bad, or they will start having diarrhea, or they will have lots of acne. There's lots of stuff. But basically, when you're going through that healing crisis, is meaning that your body is doing the right thing. People don't have to be scared about that. They need to go through that healing crisis. And usually after a week, maximum 2 weeks, you will feel better. And you will start feeling lots of energy and stuff like that. So people don't have to be scared. They need to understand that that's how the physical body heal itself. It's going through a healing crisis.
How is the community that you're in terms of eating healthy, whole plant foods in the UK? Are there lots of places where you can buy products and go to restaurants? The UK has had a really interesting history, and we've talked about this on this program, and some of it isn't very pretty.
Yeah.
And the UK has for a long time been exploiting people and other countries. And a lot of it has had to do with food, the food that they bring in to the country in order to feed the people. We've talked a lot about that on this program. We talked about how the UK has been kind of in the forefront in terms of incorporating artificial ingredients into their foods. But at the same time, I feel that the country is a bit progressive as well in terms of embracing a healthier diet. It's kind of a little bit of both. So this complicated history, but also coming into the future with a more positive outlook. So tell me about your experience.
Yeah, basically, if I have to look when I started this journey, and now we're in 2021, I can see that there's a lot of store or grocery shop store where they start incorporating lots of plant-based food, and especially the processed vegan food. There's more of them that I can see. So because the demand is very high, a lot of people are going vegan and stuff like that. So they are listening to the consumers and they are giving all this food. And but in my community, for my friends and all that, I'm the only one who is doing this. So I've tried to explain to people, but they are really addicted to their food and they just don't want to leave that. And the fact is that they don't understand that what you eat will determine how you will be. You are what you eat. And people have really difficulty understanding that, because you can eat the wrong food for many years and your body is still functioning correctly. And you will not make the connection that it's the food which is making that. But they've seen the transformation I've gone through, but I guess they don't want to do it. So for example, in my close family, it's only my brother who has been able to embrace that. But my mom, my sisters, my cousins, all of them, they said they don't want to do it. Oh. So they refuse. And among my friends, most of them as well, they said they don't want to do it. They keep saying, yes, what you're saying, we can see that it has transformed you. We can see that, but we're not ready yet. We love our meats. We love our fish. And unfortunately, we can't go through that. And they rather go to the doctor, have the medication and all that instead of stopping that. Because people really don't understand that the physical body, the way it's been constructed, you don't have to be sick all the time. If you eat the food biologically designed for the human mechanism, you'll feel great. It's like I've said for the past 5 years, I've not been sick a single day. But when I came here in the UK, every single year I had to have the flu or something like that, every single year. But since 2016 up to this day, it's completely disappeared. The only thing that I've changed, it's my way of eating. And people need to understand that being sick is basically a choice. You can make the choice of being healthy. And this starts by eating the food biologically designed for the human mechanism. It's like your car. I've got the impression that people treat their car better than their own bodies.
Good point.
Yes. For example, the constructor of the car, the manufacturer of the car will tell you that for this car, you need to use diesel. You're not going to get water and put that in the tank. You won't do that. But for the physical body, people think that they can eat whatever they want and they expect the body to work in an optimal way, which is completely false. So people really need to understand that.
You have your work cut out for you. What continues to amaze me, and I've been proselytizing, I've been preaching for decades now.
Yeah.
And I see the story repeat itself over and over. First of all, your friends and family see you. They know what you looked like before. They see you now. The proof is right there in front of their face. And yet it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, it's not enough until they're really uncomfortable. You mentioned that because the body is so forgiving, and it blows me away how the body works so well on such poor inputs,
yeah.
But it can work so much better when we take care of it. But a lot of people don't want to make a change until it's like a life or death decision,
yeah.
Which is really unfortunate. So again, I said, you have your work cut out for you. Many of us as activists have experienced this over and over and over. And one of the greatest challenges is dealing in society. And I don't know, your friends and family may not be listening to, but do they respect what you're doing? Do they give you a hard time for your choices? What happens during the holidays and the big events? Are they like, oh, Olivier's here, you know?
Yeah. So basically, I had a hard time because, you know, I've lost so much weight that people thought that they even said that I was HIV positive.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And they started to criticize me. They said, no, a man doesn't have to be slim like you. A man need to be bulky. You're not looking handsome anymore. What have you done? They're starting to criticize me. And I said, I'm not going to change what I'm doing. I'm feeling good because every single day when I'm working, I've got lots of energy. I've got no pains and aches. And you guys don't understand how it feels to wake up that way, because people are so used to be uncomfortable and they think that's how things should be. Because we've been told that when you age, it's normal to be sick, which is not right. So I've had a hard time with my family and my friends, but I said, I'm going to stick to what I'm doing and you guys will have to get used to see me as slim as I am now, because there's no way I'm going to change. And for example, when I go to, I went to one of my cousin's wedding and had to bring my own fruit.
Yep.
Because there was only meat and all these things that I don't eat. And people were not happy, but I guess I need to take care of my own health first. I don't have to make people happy. I need to make myself happy. And if they are so loving, they will have to accept the choices that I've made. And now they've stopped criticizing me and they can see that my health is getting better. But I guess with their pride, they can't say that and they continue what they have to do.
It takes a lot of courage to change, especially as an adult.
Yeah.
To change the foundation that we built our life on. It's scary.
Yeah.
Now we're in this pandemic with COVID-19 and you mentioned that you haven't had the flu in 5 years and the science is coming out that people who are eating a whole food plant diet have better chances either not getting this virus or having very minimal symptoms.
Yeah.
Which, And this is another reason why all of our governments should be promoting a healthier diet for the public, especially during a pandemic. And this is, I think, the one major flaw that the whole world has missed again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because this was a great opportunity to say, okay, we're all in this together. And one thing we know is that if we all take care of our own individual health and our own immune system, we will be able to beat this quickly with or without vaccines.
Yeah.
And we didn't hear that message. I heard from some medical professionals, some doctors, even one of my doctors sent out an email saying that we should be taking certain vitamins, vitamin D, B12, zinc. And these are definitely helpful. But not enough.
Yeah, that's why I think people need to understand that the way you treat your body, if you give it the right food, you have positive emotions. For me, for all the research that I've done, I think it's become very difficult to become sick. And like you said, if you become sick, it will be very mild because when you eat the correct food, your body become alkaline and it's difficult for a pathogen to thrive in that kind of environment. But when you are on, you eat a lot of dairy product, lots of animal product, lots of processed food, you become so toxic that your body, it will be all this pathogen will be able to thrive in that environment like that. And people need to be really, really clear about that. It's not taking vitamin or this. It's the food that you eat primarily that will make you will make your immune system very strong and you will be able to not to be sick, basically. That's what people really, really need to understand. And like I said, I've been in this way of eating, no problem. It's like, for example, my son, he had eczema for 11 years. Mm. We've seen doctors, they prescribe all sorts of creams, but there were no changes. But when we adopted this plant-based nutrition, it only took 2 weeks for his entire eczema to disappear completely. For 11 years, it was not possible. 2 weeks on a plant-based nutrition, eczema gone for good. It's like my brother as well. He was suffering from high blood pressure. He was pre-diabetic. He had the psoriasis, which is a skin condition, and he had that for 8 years. He was put on very strong steroids, and the doctor told him that you will have to be friends with the psoriasis because you're going to have that for the rest of your life. But when I introduced him to this plant-based nutrition, everything's went okay. It hasn't got blood pressure anymore. It's not pre-diabetic anymore. And the psoriasis that the doctor told him that he will have for the rest of his life is gone. So people need really, really to understand that by eating the right food, you will be able to be in good health. And people will not be affected by this virus as it is for the time being.
Most important topic to talk about is the food itself, the deliciousness. People are afraid or concerned that they're going to be deprived, that they're not going to like the food that they eat. There's all kinds of cuisines out there in the world. And I find that a plant-based diet has so much more variety. There are so many more options. It opens your world. It doesn't shrink your world. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what you and your family eat. Do you have some regular favorites?
Yeah. So basically in my family, like you said, there's a variety of stuff that we eat. For example, we can eat the plantain banana with the zucchini, the sweet corn with the tofu, or we can eat, for example, potatoes with beans and mushrooms. We can eat sweet potatoes with lentils and spinach. We can win brown rice, aubergine, chickpeas, kale. There's lots and lots of things that you can eat. For example, I've got a book, a plant-based recipe book with 365 recipes. So you can change, you can eat every single day a different recipe. So people don't have to be scared of that. They don't have to be afraid. There's lots and lots of things that they can eat. For example, me, I didn't know how to cook. But since being going on this plant-based nutrition, I've learned to cook. Now, what I'm cooking is very delicious. You can just put nice spices. They don't have to think that they will miss something. But I can understand that for people who are maybe addicted to their meat and something like that, yes, they can go for this vegan processed food that they can use as a transition food. They can do that instead of maybe going straight away to the whole food. They can use this food, this vegan processed food as a transition food just to get used to it. And then they can go to another thing, because there's a lot of people who stay on this vegan processed food and they stay unhealthy, because at the end of the day, they are still processed food. And with processed food, you've got coloring, flavoring, preservative, which are chemical substances not recognized by the body, and they create havoc. So really, there's plenty and plenty of food that you can eat on a plant-based nutrition. And people don't have to think that they will start eating the same thing. Because when you say to people that I'm vegan, the first thing that comes up in their mind is that you eat salad every day.
Well,
which is not true.
You don't have to, but it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite medical doctors, Dr. Furman, he recommends eating two big salads every day, because we do want to eat a lot of raw food in addition, like a balance of raw and cooked food. But the thing that I think that people are afraid of when it comes to salads is they think salads can be boring, and salads don't have to be boring. Salads can be really fascinating in terms of the ingredients that we can add, the different dark leafy green vegetables. You can have onions and cabbage and beans and nuts and seeds and fruits and a beautiful dressing. Salads can be really a delight. Now, you did mention that you didn't know how to cook and you learned to cook. And that can be problematic for a lot of people, because there are a lot of people that don't like to cook. They think they don't have time to cook. We have developed a society where we have encouraged people not to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
To buy things instead of doing things at home. In some ways, that can be very helpful because everybody's lives are busy. But my personal thing is I want people to find their kitchen and not rely on someone else to make food and nourish you on a daily basis. It can be great for a celebration or on vacation or something to be able to take advantage of all the options that are out there. But for the most part, we should know how to prepare our food. We should know what's in our food. We should know what's good for our bodies. And this is like knowledge that many of us seem to have forgotten or never knew to begin with. I think our ancestors knew. I do encourage people to find their kitchen and learn how to cook.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you cook, like you just said, you control the ingredient that you put. You control the quality of your food, the quantity, you control everything. So it's really, really better to start cooking. And people need to understand that the most important thing that they've got on this earth is their body. Your body is your temple, and you've only got one. So you need to do every single thing possibly you can so that you can be in good health. So if you can spare maybe 30 minutes, or a maximum an hour to cook, I don't think that it's too demanding, because people can spend 3-4 hours just watching TV or playing games, video games. But when it's come to cooking, they've got no time, which is not right. If your health is important for you, you will find the time to cook.
Bingo,
you
just hit that point. Yeah. People spend a lot of time doing things that may not be the best thing for them.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, anything else you want to share with us before I let you go?
Yes, what I would like to say is that people really, really need to understand that, like I've just said, the most important thing that they've got on this earth is their body. It's the temple, and they've only got one. So there's a way, because the message that I would like to share to people is that there's a way for them to live disease-free. There's a way. You not necessarily have to be sick. You don't have, because you said aging, I necessarily have to be sick. That's not the case, because the body is really, really resilient. And like you have said, even when you're eating the wrong food, your body will take time to become sick, because it keeps trying to put you in the normal balance. So people need to understand that being sick is a choice. You can't live a disease-free life by just choosing what you eat, the thought that goes into your mind, don't put yourself under stress, drink the water. You need to filter your water. You need to have sunshine. You need to take fresh air. You need to exercise. When people do all these things, they will be in good health and they could live a very long time. It's like, for example, I've read a book about the Hunza tribe. They live in the mountain of Pakistan, and they mostly eat raw. And they live above 100 years.
They live a long life and a quality life.
Yes.
Because unfortunately, many people are living longer, but they have aches and pains. They're on medications. Yeah. Yeah. And they're not living the ideal life that they could be.
Yeah, they are bed bound and stuff. That's not a life.
Yeah.
So you should be. It's like I've seen a vegan doctor is already dead, but he died. I forgot his name. He died at 104 years old. He was a doctor, and until 95, he was still operating.
Yes.
After 100, he was still driving his car. So that's the quality of life that we want, and people can achieve that by making good life choices.
Olivier Mancando, it's a pleasure meeting you and chatting with you. And like I said before, you have your work cut out for you, and I wish you the best.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Take care. Be well.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Olivier Mancando. And what I want to say, what surprised me most about that interview is that no matter how many decades have passed and how many of us have experienced this remarkable change of going from a standard American diet or a high processed, high animal food diet, and then we move to a whole food vegan diet, or even just a vegan diet without animal foods, not even entirely whole foods, but including some processed foods, we feel better. Many people have lost weight. There have been so many stories about people who have had a lot of excess weight and have easily lost weight on this diet. And Olivier is just another one of many. And yet, he told us, his friends and his family, they continue to eat animal foods and they don't want to change. And he is just one more person who we need to continue to preach and share this message. Gary DiMattei.
Karen Harkless.
You're here with me. You are one of those people.
It's true. It's a true statement. I am one of those people. And I'm amazed as you are, that people still want to eat animals.
You've talked about how friends and family have seen you go from very, very large to...
Very large, very unhealthy.
To a little handsome peanut that you are today.
Yes.
And yet...
Peanuts are one of the reasons why. There's a lot of people that don't like peanuts, that a lot of people are allergic to them, a lot of people are afraid of them, a lot of people say that peanuts pack on the pounds, blah, blah, blah. But I've been able to lose pounds by eating a lot of peanuts. So I'm sticking to peanuts. And what is the thing with peanuts? I mean...
Peanuts are a healthy food, especially if you eat them without salt and without all the additives in a lot of mainstream peanut butters. But if you get a peanut butter that's made with just peanuts...
Right.
That's a perfectly good food.
If you can eat peanuts and you buy peanuts to eat, like to munch on, that haven't been turned into butter, what is your suggestion, almighty one, about that?
Unsalted, roasted, dry roasted.
Dry roasted and unsalted.
Yeah.
No oil.
No oil, please.
Yeah, that's my favorite. And also organic.
Of course, organic.
Organic.
Organic. Anyway, the point is that we are a long way from... hitting that tipping point. I was delighted to speak with Olivier to hear about his experience and living in the UK and trying to get people to learn what he's learned.
We just had a friend move to Europe, a friend moved to Berlin, speaking of Olivier, which was a great interview, by the way. And that rhymes. Olivier, great interview, by the way. But we had a friend who just moved to Europe and he's now living in Berlin. He sent you a text and said, you and Gary should move here. There are a lot of vegan restaurants.
He said about a quarter of the restaurants are vegan. And I heard it is a vegan mecca there.
Yes.
Which is very exciting.
And I heard the UK is also quite the vegan mecca now, as well as other places in Europe.
Well, it's definitely
growing.
What's
happening with the US? Why aren't we catching on? A lot of folks are trying to offer vegan alternatives, fast food restaurants, but there seem to be some problems now, according to some of the newspapers and things, about some of these vegan products aren't really selling as well as the investors have hoped they would.
Yeah, so I've seen a few different articles on this. One is the PeopleSay.com. That's PIPLSAY.com.
People say.
They polled 30,700 people nationwide to get some insights on people who have tried these plant-based fast food meat alternatives. And they found some very interesting data. They said that about only 15% of self-identified vegans or vegetarians have tried these plant-based fast foods, but 40% of meat eaters have. And I think we knew this, that the fast food establishments are really catering to meat eaters.
Exactly.
And this is a good thing because we want meat eaters to be eating less meat and embracing these plant-based alternatives. So this was an interesting article and the numbers were encouraging. They also talked about how vegans and vegetarians, and I'm glad they mentioned this because this is how we feel, we're not interested in eating in a fast food restaurant. We're not interested in eating highly processed food. And we're also concerned about the issue of cross-contamination. We don't know. Some may say that they don't flip their vegan burgers on the same grill as the meat burgers, but who knows?
That's a big concern with me. I know you also agree. Occasionally, I'll admit it, I have French fries, but not in a restaurant. We bake our fries at home, and I don't get them in a restaurant that's not 100% vegan. Because I ask and I say, do you drop the fries in the same oil that you, for example, cook your, you know, buffalo wings or your fish and chips and things? And they normally, they're honest and they say, yeah, we do.
Well, there's two issues with French fries. There's cooking it in the same oil as the animal foods that are being fried. And then there's McDonald's. And right. Can we ever trust them? So for a very long time.
Yeah, this is a fascinating. Repeat this. This needs to be repeated.
For a very long time, many people thought that their French fries were vegan or vegetarian. They didn't have animal products in them. And there were people from India, for example, that were staunch vegetarians and were eating the French fries. And then at some point, it was divulged that they put beef flavoring in the French fry at the factory. So they weren't cooking it with animal products in any of their stores, but it already came with beef flavoring in the French fry. So they were never, ever vegetarian. And I think still to this day, they do this.
Wow.
French fries.
Weren't they sued for that?
They were, and they paid a small amount, a drop in the bucket, to a number of different vegetarian organizations, like $1 million to one and $1 million to another. But
they continue doing it anyway.
Yeah. So I don't trust them. That's my point.
I don't blame you. Well, this People Say article also has a little survey, and it says several major U.S. fast food chains have begun to serve fake meat or plant-based meat on their menu. Were you aware of this? 71% said yes. 29% said no. Next question was, if yes, then have you tried any of it? 54% said yes, 46% said no. And then they list the fast food chains that are serving plant-based meat. And then they said, if you have tried fake meat or plant-based meat, how would you rate your experience? 70% said good, 18% said not so good, 12% said not good at all. So out of the people that have tried it in this survey, you know, 70% said they enjoyed the experience. And then the other question is, would you continue eating fake meat or plant-based meat during your subsequent visits? 60% said yes, 24% said no, 16% said not sure. If yes, then what is your reason? 42% said for the health reasons, 34% said for the flavor, and 24% said for environmental reasons.
That's pretty interesting.
Nobody said for the animals.
Yeah, thank you. Nobody said for the animals.
Well, we have to always remind our listeners, we're here primarily for
the animals. That was my reason for going vegan.
That was your reason for going vegan. And that's our reason for
doing everything we do.
Doing this nonprofit organization, Responsible Eating and Living.
But I want to bring up that while that article was very encouraging, with over 30,000 people polled and interesting, very promising numbers, Bloomberg Businessweek put out an article this week called Faux Meat Falters at the Drive-Thru. And according to their numbers, fast food restaurants across the United States are finding that this interest in plant-based meats is kind of fizzling a little bit and is not bringing in as much business as they expected.
It's not such a hot topic.
Well, like it was, but then it's kind of fizzling, like I said. So the article says that Dunkin', for example, Dunkin' Donuts, has taken Beyond Meat's breakfast sausage out of thousands of locations. And KFC ran trials of Beyond Meat's chicken nuggets, and they haven't turned it into a regular menu item. And Burger King has kind of wound down a little on marketing of the Impossible Whopper. So a lot of the big chains are not seeing the business that they had expected, whereas some smaller chains are doing pretty good with these plant-based meats.
Bloomberg focuses on the business side of things, right? So they're looking at the numbers.
They're just looking at cold numbers.
Right. So those three restaurants that you mentioned, Dunkin', KFC, Burger King, I don't think many people are going to be going to those restaurants and wanting to look for a plant-based meal to begin with. I mean, my hunch is that they're dying down because the curiosity is no longer there about it. They've tried it, and they're going to go in and get what they normally get. I mean, Dunkin', for example, that's just, you know, you go into a donut store, you're going to get a donut, right?
Right.
You're not going to care about if it's made with animal products or not. Same with Burger King and KFC. In other words, I wouldn't walk into those places looking for something vegan. Those big chains are faltering a bit, but it's the smaller, more boutique-y kind of restaurants that seem to be holding pretty strong, right?
Yeah, well, I read in a different article, businessinsider.com, which was where I first learned about the Pipple Say survey. They said that Eat Just, which many of you know is Josh Tetrick's company, the egg replacement maker with its Just Egg product, they are continuing to partner with fast food restaurants, and they say there's a growing demand, especially for millennials and Gen Z. They say customers are looking for plant-based options at fast food places like Pete's, for example. And Pete's isn't as big of a chain as some of the other ones I've mentioned, but
it does attract a different crowd than KFC.
It does. It attracts a different crowd.
A different crowd than Burger King and a different crowd than Dunkin' Donuts.
And this everything plant-based sandwich, according to the Eat Just people, is selling three times what was initially forecast. And it has a permanent menu placement.
So that Bloomberg story might be a little misleading.
And it kind of tells you that there are different sectors of the population that are going for different kinds of food. And I think people who go to Pete's Coffee, for example, are not the same people who are going to Dunkin'.
That's right. They aren't. Or Burger King or KFC.
Right.
So we want those folks that go to Burger King, KFC, and Dunkin' to go over to Pete's and the other places because they'll like them better.
We would like everyone to take a little bit more interest in the food that they're eating and what goes into their food.
Exactly. Because it's important.
It is important. It's important for our personal health. It's important for the environment and
the animals.
But the most important article that I want to point out today.
Speaking of what goes into your food, take it away, Karen.
This is a very long, detailed, comprehensive article at thecounter.org. It's called Lab-Grown Meat is Supposed to Be Inevitable. The Science Tells a Different Story.
We've talked
about lab-grown meat. It's also called cell meat, cultivated meat, clean meat. There's all these different names. I think cultivated meat is now the most popular version, giving it kind of like a classy name. It's cultured. It's classy. It's cultivated.
Yeah, it's very cultured. It's very classy, right.
But what we've said here on this program over and over and over, number one, yes, we want animals to stop being killed and exploited. That's obvious. And if there was a way to do it, we would support it. I do not believe that funds should be put into this project of lab-grown meat food.
You're staunch about this.
And this particular article tells you that it is not possible to do it for many, many, many reasons. So obviously there is the expense, and it is still very expensive, and it is not going to reach a price point where it can compete with meat items. Now, we could also talk about how meat today, the cost of meat is, we don't know the true cost. We're not paying the true cost of meat because there are so many subsidies, supports, that bring meat to people's plates. We're not paying for the meat, the cost of meat directly. We're paying for raising meat and dairy products and eggs with our tax dollars. So we don't see the true cost of meat.
And we're paying for it with our health and the environment and the cost on the environment and the animals.
So it's kind of difficult to compare, but lab-grown meat is expensive. And there are groups that are saying it's going to scale up by 2030. 2030 is
too late.
Well, it's only 8 years away, almost.
And it may be too late.
Yeah, we need things to happen now. But lab-grown meat is not going to get to the scale it needs to get to by 2030. And this article explains why. And there are many, many issues. One of them that kind of gave me the chills was that when they're growing these animal cells, these meat cells in these vats, the little animal cells that they're growing don't have their own immune system. So they could get infected with bacteria and all the contents in the vat are then worthless and they have to dump it. And there are things that they could put into the solution, into the medium to kind of prevent them getting infected with viruses, but there are problems with all of those additives that they could use.
Yeah.
So this is a big problem.
Again, with the viruses.
Yeah.
Right?
We have to be careful with bacteria. There are good bacteria, there are bad bacteria, but bacteria where you don't want them can destroy the product. It's very expensive. And you know how I cannot stand how many people say bigger is better. Bigger is not better in many, many instances. And they're looking to scale up in growing this cultivated meat in larger and larger containers. But the larger they get, the more difficult it is to make a quality product.
So cultivated meat companies have repeatedly missed product launch deadlines because of this very reason, right?
Yeah, they just can't do it. It's not feasible. And what's the most frustrating for me in all of this? Okay, I love technology and science, creating things and making the world a better place.
Right.
We already have the solution.
Yes.
For feeding humans on this planet. We have the solution. It is whole plant foods, grains, beans, vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds. These are the foods that we are meant to eat. And if we can grow them in an organic way, preferably in smaller farms, not giant agribusiness farms, more people can be put to work. We can sustain the soil growing wildflowers around the field and using beneficial insects. This knowledge exists. The thing is that a small group of people or a small group of companies cannot make massive profits this way.
Right.
So I would rather see the money that these investors are putting into this cultivated meat science and put it towards marketing of education about nutrition, putting it towards promoting policy change, because we need all governments all over the world to be supporting this concept. That's not going to happen, is it?
Well, you're someone who is continuing to produce these programs because you believe that you will make a difference, or you hope that you will make a difference, that one person can make a difference. And there are a few more people out there just like you that are making a difference. But when we walk down the street here in New York and we see the lines outside of these jerk chicken flesh establishments and these establishments that, you know, that sell burgers and fries and shakes, it's disheartening. It really is, because the masses seem to want their meat. And so that's why this cell lab meat company is getting all of these investments, because these investors, and correct me if I'm wrong, these investors that are pouring a lot of money into this cell meat know that there's no way the public's taste for meat is going to wane anytime soon. And
right.
They know that it's not the way that raising animals for slaughter in order to provide meat for the public to consume isn't sustainable. So something's got to give.
And, you know, some of these investors, they have good motives. They want to help. I'm reading this counter article, and I recommend everyone reading it because
And you'll post the link?
I will, but it's really a powerful article. And there are people that are investing in cultivated meat that are believing the hype that they're being told. Some people present studies that show that all of this can take place and take place within a certain time frame, producing good results by 2030. This article reveals that there are problems in a lot of the data that was presented. It's all explained in this article. I can't go through it line by line. We don't have the time.
Well, let me just read one of the sections of this counter article that gave me chills. The stakes couldn't be higher. In August, the United Nations released a nearly 4,000-page report amounting to what it called a code red for humanity. Unless the world's nations make a vast coordinated effort to stop burning fossil fuels and raising forests, we'll find ourselves locked into an even more dire, unforgiving future than the one we're facing now. At a time when bold environmental solutions are needed, we can only afford to direct public and private investment towards solutions that actually work. But without looking more closely at the fundamentals, something media has largely declined to do, we can't know whether cultured meat is our salvation or an expensive distraction. So that's kind of chilling right there, because amid this code red, we're still not coming up with the answer that you just gave.
We have the answer.
We have it.
We have the answer.
It's here.
Yeah,
why are we not looking at it?
We can feed people in a way that will improve their health, decrease our healthcare costs.
So the frustration that you're feeling and the frustration that I'm feeling is the answer is here and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, except a few of us.
A few of us here, the giant carrot in the room, has the solution. It fixes everything. It solves all of the problems and it can be done deliciously. You'll never miss your meat. Yes, you could try these meat analogs. Yes, you could try these Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers and Just Eggs and all of that. But you don't even need to go there because we have the solution right here at Responsible Eating and Living.
Now, some of this cultivated meat science could have benefit, but not when it comes to making food. It may have some benefit in the healthcare arena. I don't know.
Yeah, but like if somebody needs a muscle grown, you know, maybe it can grow a muscle for a human, right? Maybe
something to replace parts that we need.
Replace an organ, maybe replace.
Yeah. So this would be on a very small scale. I have no idea how it would be done, but that kind of science I could get behind.
Yeah, I was hoping that would eventually happen too, because I used to watch Star Trek and, you know, you lose something and it can grow back.
And of course, this would be very expensive because it would be on a smaller scale and the science behind it is intense, but I would think that our society would want to get behind it because it would be doing something good for humanity, for those people in need.
Yeah.
But we don't need to be growing cultivated meat for food. And it takes, apparently according to this article, it takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of energy. The greenhouse gas emissions related to it may be better than raising meat, but it's nowhere near as good as growing plant food to feed people.
Right. But they're getting tons of dough for this, right?
Yep,
they're getting lots of cash because they realize, or someone realizes, that money can be made on this product.
Yeah, some people are making money and people are being put to work and they're doing some interesting science, but I think their claims are a little far-fetched. Now, I want to wrap up the program talking about our weekend brunch. Can we do that?
Let's do it.
I love talking about delicious food, and we certainly...
Well, it's a great segue because we did it all without any cell lab meat, without any Beyond Meats or Impossible Meats or Just Meats or any of that stuff.
We did it with minimally processed whole foods.
And it was delicious.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So we both participated in preparing our Sunday brunch. And what was fun about it is, you may know we plan on directing Pirates of Penzance later this year. And so we've been listening to soundtracks of this production while we do a lot of things. And we listened to one soundtrack, and it took us the entire soundtrack.
The entire operetta.
To prepare
Brunch or
the brunch. Right. And then when the music was over, we were finished and we could sit down and enjoy it. And I think most people would not want to spend that much time in the kitchen preparing food.
But see, for us, that's fun.
But it was fun.
Yeah.
So, Gary, you made the tofu scramble.
I did.
And you did it a little differently this time.
On our website, under recipes, go to the recipe index at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Go to breakfast, scroll down, and you'll come to French scramble. The foundation of the tofu scramble that I made today was in the style of the French scramble recipe that we have on our website, only I added a spice mix to it. It's an Italian spice mix that I mixed with a little bit of turmeric and a little cashew cream. It was good.
I think it was your best tofu scramble ever.
Right. It was an herby.
Yeah, but the herbs were delicate and really mixed nicely.
Yeah. And you know, the secret to that was I put the herbs, the dried herbs, in a spice grinder and I made them into a powder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what did it. I was very happy with it.
I was happy with it too. Now, meanwhile, I've been working on a bagel project.
Yes, this is right up there with your apple cake project.
Yep, I'm on a bagel project. I don't know where I got the idea, but last week I thought I'm going to make a gluten-free, vegan, of course, bagel. I haven't talked about this in a while, but you know, I like to use whole grain flours. I like to grind my own flours. I've gotten away from using a premix, a gluten-free premix that comes with starches and xanthan gum. I'm just using grains. And I thought, I'm going to use that donut cake pan mold that we got a few years ago when we wanted to try Del Saruf's recipe for making a SOS-free donut, a salt-free, sugar-free, oil-free donut. And they were pretty good. They're not as sweet as most people would want a donut to be, but they were fun.
If you're hankering for a donut and you want to cut back on all of the sugar, that was a great recipe.
That was good. And I liked the icing, which was sweet potato puree-based.
Right.
So that was fun. All right. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to use this mold. I put together a recipe that was a quick bread. It had baking powder in it. It wasn't something that needed to rise. And the first pass at it, I included some cinnamon and pecans and raisins. And I made a cinnamon raisin pecan bagel.
Yeah, it was great.
And wow, the first try, right?
It was great.
It was amazing.
It was awesome.
And the density was like a bagel density.
It was,
right?
It was dense, bagel-y. It fooled me. And I used to be a big bagel fan. And this
it was pretty good. And
pretty good. It was fantastic.
It was very good. And I grew up on bagels. And I've loved eating bagels. But bagels, for the most part, are made from refined white flour when they're not organic. And where can you find an organic bagel? Nowhere. But when they're not organic and they're made with refined white flour, you know there's going to be glyphosate residue in that wheat flour. And I just don't want putting that stuff in my body.
No. Once in a while, you want a bagel.
Once in a while, you want a bagel. So my bagel is based on rolled oats, millet, and garbanzo bean flour. There's no oil in it. There's no sugar in it. There's no salt in it. And after I made the cinnamon raisin pecan bagel, we thought, let's see what it tastes like without all the flavorings and make a savory bagel. So I made a regular bagel without all of those extras and put sesame seeds on the top. And that was pretty good too, right?
That was amazing. And you're just going to keep making it. And I really like the fact that you don't want to use any gums.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, it's all holding together too.
It's all holding together.
You don't really need gums.
For our brunch on Sunday, I thought I'm going to try a yeasted version. So instead of baking powder, I used yeast. This recipe is the same, but it requires an extra half hour to allow the dough to rise.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the deal.
Otherwise, this recipe is really quick.
And it's really good.
And it's really good.
It was my favorite.
So the yeasted version has a lovely yeasted bread flavor.
It does.
It's a little lighter in texture. I'm going to post the recipe with all the different variations, and I hope you'll try them and let us know what you think. But this
Please
is a
do.
Keeper.
It was really fun.
We've come to the end of the program.
We have?
We have.
Oh, that's interesting because I could keep talking about food.
Okay, well,
with you.
We'll say goodbye to everyone and we'll continue the conversation.
Okay,
offline.
That sounds good.
Okay, everybody,
have a delicious week.